All right, want to go back to our phone lines. We have political contributor Steve Gill joining the program, and I want to get his reaction to what our caller just said, where you have U.S. District Judge Thomas Parker, who was, yes, appointed by former President Donald Trump, basically coming out and saying that this drag show law is going to make it legal for children to attend these sexually explicit drag shows. It's unbelievable. Steve, your reaction.
Well, we already have anti-pornographic laws on the books. We could use those to enforce some of these provocative performances in front of children. And I really have less problem with the judge in this particular case than I do with the legislature that kind of in a rush to do something did not draft the legislation particularly clearly. For example, one of the rulings that the judge made was that the way that it reads is it only prohibited these sexual performances in front of 17-year-olds. It didn't protect all children. It just protected 17-year-olds because the way the legislation was poorly drafted because they rushed to get it done. So I actually have more concerns with how the legislature drafted the legislation, passed it, the governor signed it, rather than doing it right. There's an old adage, if you're doing anything with wood construction, measure twice, cut once. And I think in this case, they cut quickly and didn't measure at all. I would say I'd have two suggestions for the questioning if you get a chance with the president, Todd. First, one of the key demographics the president has to win a general election, not a primary election, but a general election, is suburban women. And how does he feel that attacks on people like Kayleigh McEnany are going to help him with women voters in the general election? And there's a lot of pushback with the way he treated his former press secretary. But across the board, he has a major challenge among female voters. What is his strategy to get those voters back in his column versus the way his attacks on Kayleigh McEnany have kind of exhibited the wrong approach? And I think the second one is what is he going to do this time to do better about personnel? We know that policy is personnel. And in his administration, he appointed people like Fauci, Chris Wray, Comey. The list of those that he put in power in his administration have caused immeasurable damage to the country. You look again at the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. You look at others that he put in place. Again, and I think the question about judges is right on the point as well. But what about the rest of the personnel he put in place that have caused immeasurable damage to our country? Has he learned anything that will make him do a better job picking people this time than he did last time?
All right. On the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line is Steve Gill, and this segment is brought to you by GodBlessTheUSABible.com. That's GodBlessTheUSABible.com. It makes a terrific gift for one of your loved ones, and especially for a conservative patriot. GodBlessTheUSABible.com. You know, Steve, I want to go back to this McEnany thing. My question for McEnany would be, does she regret all of the horrible things she said about Donald Trump? Not only after she was named press secretary in those text messages between herself and Sean Hannity, but before the election when she was trashing Donald Trump. And I think that's why the president felt betrayed, because had it not been for him naming her press secretary, her career would never have taken off like it did at Fox News.
Oh, and I agree with that. And again, the emails between Hannity and her and Hannity and others are what cost them in that Dominion lawsuit. It wasn't that the information that was being conveyed on Fox was inaccurate. It was that what they were saying on air was in conflict to what they believed personally. So when you get into that kind of situation where I'm publicly saying one thing, but I'm admitting I don't believe what I'm saying, that was a big problem. I just think that, you know, I think the Kayleigh McEnany issue is it looks like he's punching down at a woman at a time when he's got to win women's votes. And I think that between the, and again, admittedly ridiculous lawsuit in New York with E. Jean Carroll and other examples, he's got a problem with female voters as it is. He's got to have a better strategy for winning them back than picking fights with somebody on Fox News that was simply reading a story that was placed before her in terms of the polling data. I mean, again, he sometimes fights on the leaves instead of keeping his view on the forest and even the trees.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of that race to the White House, it is getting busier and more crowded by the day. This is going to be a big week for folks across the country, but really they're all in Iowa right now. You have Nikki Haley. She did a town hall with CNN last night, but then on Wednesday, I believe former Vice President Mike Pence is going to announce. Take a listen here in Cut 8.
And I don't have anything to announce today, but I can tell you, when I got time to announce, come this Wednesday, I'm announcing in Iowa.
All right, there you go. And former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie as well. Is it going to make it easier for Trump to win the nomination with all of these people jumping in?
You know, it'll make it more conflicted in the early primary and caucus battles. Again, you're going to have 20 people apparently on the ballot in Iowa, with guys like this governor of North Dakota, South Dakota, East Dakota, West Dakota. I don't even know which Dakota he's governor of, but he has absolutely no chance. Chris Christie is in it just because he wants to continue to flail about and attack Donald Trump. None of that's going to win a significant measure of votes. I don't think it's going to bring in significant money for them to compete beyond maybe Iowa or New Hampshire. But I think that the split in Iowa may give President Trump a chance to win Iowa rather than having Ron DeSantis come up and win Iowa, get some momentum heading into New Hampshire and South Carolina and Nevada. I think for the first time in a while, Tennessee will really, really matter. Now, I think most of these folks that are announcing aren't going to be viable candidates by the time we get to that first mini Super Tuesday, because instead of having a huge Super Tuesday, the way the calendar works this time, there's like two or three Super Tuesdays. Tennessee is in that first tranche. California is in that first group as well. But I don't think most of these people are going to make it out of New Hampshire. So you're going to have a winnowed down field by the time it gets here. But I think it's still a battle when it gets to Tennessee. And some of these folks that are announcing are clearly depending on the anti-Trump vote within the Republican primary. So, you know, all of these 2-3% candidates, when they drop out, I don't think most of their votes are going to flow back to President Trump. I think they're going to go to somebody who looks like a viable alternative to President Trump. So they're more likely to start to give extra votes to a Ron DeSantis or maybe a Tim Scott at that point, which will give them added momentum coming into Tennessee and the other Super Tuesdays. Most of these folks won't be able to raise the money to run viable candidacies in New Hampshire, in South Carolina, Nevada, and even make it to Super Tuesday.
Well, no doubt DeSantis has certainly got the big money behind him, and certainly I would say the long-time Republican donors are lining up behind DeSantis. But I've noticed it really hasn't moved the needle at all when it comes to the polling, and I'm wondering why you think that is.
You know, it's still a little bit early, and people are kind of still fixed on who they support now. But keep in mind that when you go back historically, both the Republican and Democratic primaries, whoever's leading now has not tended to fare very well. Now, you haven't had a former president like Donald Trump. You haven't had the base of support that he enjoys and the I'll crawl over cracked glass on hot asphalt in August type of support he has from his base. So you haven't had that before, and I don't see him dropping, you know, significantly below that 30-35% of Republican primary voters nationally that are all in for Trump. The question is, if DeSantis starts to make some moves, if he starts to see his numbers increase, as he get out and is actually campaigning, I think he looks well, he looks like he's saying the right things, he's conveying the kind of confidence that you want to see in a challenger. If he could start to cut into that Trump lead, which right now is 25-35 points, if it starts getting down to a 20-15 point margin, I think that there is a significant portion of President Trump's popularity in these polls that is based on inevitability. I think he's going to win, therefore I'm for him. If that inevitability starts to take a shot and starts to drop, I think that's where you could see DeSantis start to make some significant moves and give us a battle that'll go well into the primary season.
All right, good stuff. Way to break it down for the listeners. Steve, always appreciate your time. We'll see you on Wednesday or Thursday. In the meantime, people can go check out your commentary. The Gill Report on Twitter is where they're going to find that. All right, Steve, take it easy.
Thanks, guys. Have a good Monday.